Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. Thanks for joining me today, and thank you also for listening to RBN. To see the guest schedule for this program, go to Spingola.com, click on the radio schedule button, choose the year and the month, and you may see a list of the guests and their websites. You may also see the RBN calendar by going to republicbroadcasting.org and clicking on upcoming interviews and events. For questions or comments during the program, email spingola1@yahoo.com. My regular email is deanna@spingola.com. The only time I ever look at spingola1@yahoo.com is during the program. Otherwise, I just use my regular email. RBN, as you know, is conducting a pledge drive to raise funds in order to expand their programming to a much wider audience. I hope that you will help in that effort. Individuals usually cannot adequately share what we know. Therefore, let the many voices of RBN be your vehicle to teach those that you cannot reach. You can do this by contributing to the pledge drive and or by supporting RBN by purchasing products from the RBN website. Be a part of the solution and participate in the expansion of truth by making a donation or purchase today. Make part of that purchase some RBN business cards or bumper stickers. You can also support RBN by subscribing to the archives at republicbroadcasting.org. Our guest today is Carl Rattle. He is the author of Communism and the Jews, a Source Reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. Welcome to the program, Carl.
Hi, Deanna. Good to be back.
Well, it's wonderful to have you back. And how are you?
Oh, I'm pretty well, thank you very much, after everything that happened with me.
Yes. I'm glad that you're good, and I'm glad to have you back on the program. And we were going to talk about the International Jew, about its reception, and about Henry Ford. And there are so many questions and issues that revolve around this. He did put out quite a few articles and kind of suffered some consequences for that. But he also, in my mind, you know, I have some questions that I hope that will be answered today. So are you ready?
Waiting for you. Well, first things first, I think it's best to actually split how we deal with Henry Ford. In the first program, as the listeners may know, I'm going to be on tomorrow as well. The first program, I think it's best to deal with Henry Ford. And the reasons he disliked Jews and the International Jew as reception and any eccentricities of Ford himself and the fact that and how Ford dealt with it, how dealt with the sort of the crisis and his subsequent repudiation of anti-Semitism in 1927. And then the second program come back to the actual content of the International Jew because that is you could write several academic dissertations on that alone because it's a widespread of material. And if anyone's got any particular essay within the International Jew they want me to discuss, just send me an email, or you send Deanna an email, she can pass it to me, and I can look at that essay particularly. To begin then about Henry Ford himself. He was, I think the best term would be a flawed genius. He's a man who created his own company and did so in a very, very big way.
All righty. We do have to go to a quick 3-minute break. We will be right back.
Slings are now available for civilian uses. Order yours in camo, black, and any custom unit colors. Call 877-MY-BUNKER, the battle rifle all-purpose carrier. Put your rifle safely where it needs to be, at the ready. for a moment's notice. Your rifle is not leaning on a tree or in your trunk. It's with you when you need it. Rifles or shotguns will fit comfortably and safely in backpack mode or transition simply to a tactical single-point harness in seconds. Watch a demonstration of the BRAC at 877mybunker.com. The BRAC is American-made with a lifetime guarantee. BRAC fits your rifles or shotguns, 22s, M16s, your M60, even the Barrett 50 Cal, and more. Call 877-MY-BUNKER or go online to 877mybunker.com to see the video. Save 20% now by calling 877-MY-BUNKER. That's 877-692-8653 and mention you heard this ad on RBN. Save 20%. Just mention you heard it on RBN.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite is a 7-herb heart protection cocktail designed to support cardiovascular health, blood pressure, and cholesterol levels. February is Heart Month, and we at Heart Drop 2000 are having our leap year sale with prices from 5 years ago. From February 1st to February 29th, you can purchase a 4-month supply of either capsules or liquid for only $125, including shipping and handling. To help you, help yourself. So call now to take advantage of this one-time offer. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
Welcome back. Our guest today is Carl Rattle, and his website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. All righty. So we're going to be talking about Henry Ford, and he was a flawed genius.
Yes, because he created his own business, business empire, in a very, very well-known way. So he created, so he built his own industry up on his own ideas, his own manufacturing process, and so on and so forth. He was a bit of a strange man in many ways because he grew up on a farm.
Okay. Carl, do you know who funded him? Did he have anybody fund him?
No, actually, he didn't. It's one of the weird things about Henry Ford. He didn't have any major funders, as far as I can recall, immediately. He didn't have any sort of a Jewish funder, like, say, Richard Branson of the Virgin Group, who has a whole bunch of Jewish funders behind him. Didn't have that with Henry Ford.
Right. I tried to find him, and I was unsuccessful.
No, that's probably because they weren't there in this particular case. In most cases, you'd probably be right that there was some kind of funding group behind the rides of a major conglomerate like the Ford Group. But in this particular case, it doesn't appear to have been, certainly not from what I've read. He had a lot of strange ideas, as I said. He grew up on a farm. He didn't like animals very much. He was a massive proponent of soya, of all things. And he had all sorts of food made from soya and what have you. And he even had cars made with round soya because he wanted to get away from petrol at one point in his life. And he liked to present himself as being a sort of a rugged frontier man of the Wild West era, even though he was incredibly pro-industrialization. And you can see that in, say, a Ford-sponsored biography, which is one of which was The Truth About Henry Ford by Sarah Bush in 1922. which presents him as putting
Could you turn your volume down just a little bit because it's going back into your mic and causing some feedback.
Is that better?
Might be. Is that better, Dan? Alrighty. Yeah, that's better. Thank you.
Yes, he liked to present himself as being this all-American Wild West character, very much like the type of American being propounded by Theodore Lothrop Stoddard at the same time, who's a famous American eugenicist and historian. And there's a lot of myths about Henry Ford in relation to his anti-Semitism and his feelings towards the Jews, many of which come from the earlier period of his life. For example, in his lawsuit against the Chicago Tribune in 1919, he refused to answer any questions at all in the witness box, and that gave rise to a left-wing and liberal sort of canard and common myth they propounded in their articles about him, that he was utterly illiterate and thus unintelligent, and that someone else had to have built up his empire for him. It was a way of discrediting him, if you like.
Sure.
And that got resuscitated during the controversies about the international Jew. He modified Frederick Taylor's theory of what we call scientific management, i.e. the compartmentalization of work. And that became what we still call today Fordism. It's an entire sociological field, which shows somewhat of how important Henry Ford has been in the past sort of 100 years. He sought to combat the problems associated with his approach. He introduced the living wage, which is one of the first people to do so. And he made sure that his workers lived well, but at the same time he had an investigation bureau that kept tabs on all his workers to see were they abiding by prohibition, were they not sleeping around, were they going to church, were they putting money by for a rainy day, that kind of thing. He enforced prohibition pretty stringently. He actually made his employees sign documents saying they would not drink, even if they were non-US employees or they were US employees, say, who had gone to Fordlandia, which you may have heard of, which was Ford's experimental rubber plantation in Brazil, which was actually, in an interesting tie-in, it was meant to help break Winston Churchill's proposed Anglo-French domination of the rubber trade to pay off the war debts of Britain and France had incurred in that disaster called World War I, of all things. He was a close friend of Thomas Edison, perhaps somewhat unknown, but he also was the major person responsible for collecting a lot of ephemera of Edison's life and had them all in a big museum in Dearborn. As to the Jews, which is the subject of our talk today, really, his attitudes spring from several sources, I would say. One of which is that he read a couple of books that were critical of Jews, and we know he read them because we have annotations that Ford made in his own copies. Perhaps the most important of all the works he read at this time was Orlando Smith's A Short View on Great Questions from 1888. Now, despite its very obsequious title, Orlando Smith was the Regius Professor of History at Oxford at the time he wrote it. And it's basically a book that talks about several issues, and one of which is the pogroms in Russia and about the Jews and how the Jews were involved in sort of left-wing movements in Russia and so forth. And Smith was one of the first to propound the correct view on the pogroms that occurred in Tsarist Russia during 1881, such as the Kishinev pogrom. He said, and he used Russian documents to prove this, that it wasn't that it was a local uprising against things that the Jews had themselves done. This was a view that until fairly recently was very unfashionable, even though we knew it was correct. We've known it's correct since the 1960s.
It wasn't a central government kind of thing. It was just a response against what they had done on a local basis.
Precisely.
Do you think the Jews had something to do with it themselves? That perhaps they may have even participated as terrorist organizations in going after their own people?
That isn't outside the realms of possibility, and even it's possibly quite likely. There are historical precedents for that. For example, the case in France of Nicolas Donin. He was a Jewish convert to Christianity, and he had been expelled from the Jewish community in Paris by the local rabbi. And he, having some knowledge of the Talmud, went to the authorities in Paris and said, my co-religionists don't want you to know this, but this is what the Talmud says about Jesus. And that, in the end, led to the deaths of thousands of the entire Paris community of Jews, with Donin egging the attacks on Jews on even more. So there is a precedent for just that, of Jews getting involved to attack for either their own motivations, like Donin, or to do something to create a situation which would, in the end, be favourable to Jews, a bit like Kristallnacht, which I think it's been proven beyond reasonable doubt to have had some Jewish involvement in creating that particular scenario.
Right.
And, yeah, so you have got that. It's just you don't have... There isn't a smoking gun, if you like, with the pogroms. There isn't a single person or group that you can say, yes, this person was Jewish and involved in the pogrom, and so on and so forth. It's conjectural, but quite probable that you had some kind of Jewish involvement there.
Okay.
And Ford Hickman, the reason I say that Smith's book is so revolutionary for the time is because this view of this conspiracy against Jews from Gentiles has been so common and been so propounded by people who attacked Ford later. And one of the classic points that Smith himself makes is about the 6 million figure, later known in the Holocaust. That figure was started being used in the pogroms of the 1880s. It's from the rabbinical concept of the guzma, or literally dead. Literally, what you do is you times the number of Israelites who came out of Israel according to the Talmud. That's 600,000. And you times that by the amount of how bad you perceive the pogrom to be. So you get numbers like 1.2 million dead, 1.8 million dead, and it isn't unreasonable to suppose, well, it's a horrible thing. Let's times it by 10, 6 million. Hence, 6 million figure turns up. Right. And that figure, as we know, comes down through the ages to the Holocaust, of course, and was being propounded, as I said, way back in the 1880s, and we know it. No one disputes that. But what people try and say is, oh no, they didn't, oh, it was just coincidence. I don't think so. I don't think so. You can see how silly it is to say that's a coincidence.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it's been proven, in several ways, particularly in, Don Hedesheimer's book. I mean, he has all kinds of documentation about this and has certainly proven to my satisfaction anyway, and to a lot of other people, that this figure is based on their own Talmud and their own dogma.
Yeah, precisely.
All righty, we do have to take a 3-minute break. We will be right back in just a moment after a word from our sponsors.
The Self-Reliance Expo is coming to the Mesquite Convention Center February 10th and 11th. The keynote presenter is Mike Adams, the health ranger and editor-in-chief of naturalnews.com. Come and hear what more than 3.2 million people read about from Mike Adams every month. Mike will be speaking on survival nutrition, how to choose foods and supplements that will keep you alive and healthy. Hourly education workshops and presentations will be taking place each day at the Self-Reliance Expo. Classes include cooking essentials by Sun Ovens, personal protection, home defense, canine demonstrations, homeschooling, learn to suture by Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, and how to build underground structures. This is one expo that is a must for all ages. There will be prize giveaways and drawings, exhibitor awards, and much more. For more information, go to selfrelianceexpo.com. Like us on Facebook and save $2 when buying your tickets online. Kids 12 and under are free. Tickets valid for both days, so bring the whole family. selfrelianceexpo.com.
Are you still paying your credit cards and so-called bank loans thinking that you owe the money? Do you feel like it's your moral obligation but can't see an end in sight? Well, what if I told you that in truth, you don't owe a single penny and that the banks know this and hope you don't find out? Here's where we come in. Free2Prosper.com specializes in a profound debt repudiation method which challenges the validity of your so-called debts, morally frees you from the burdens, and protects your property. Our system is often superior to settlement, bankruptcy, or consolidation, which often leave you in a worse situation. If you feel the moral obligation to take care of yourself and your family, then I urge you to consider taking action right now. The economy will not wait. If you want to know more so you can prosper through the economic collapse, all while staying honorable and true to yourself, then call 877-417-8393. That's 877-417-8393. Or visit free2prosper.com right now.
Have you been diagnosed with cancer and told that there isn't any alternative to chemo, radiation, and surgery? Are you tired of hearing that if you want to survive, you must be brave and accept the suffering that comes with cancer treatments today? LaserMed Inc. says, fight back! Because now it's cancer's turn to die with its revolutionary patented laser treatment called Leash Therapy. Without cutting, bleeding, poisoning, or damaging radiation, we can kill skin and breast cancer in place, as well as some other types of cancer, no matter what the size. To find out if you qualify for this therapy, call 918-398-9577. That's 918-398-9577. Or visit www.lasemedinc.com. That's LASEMEDINC.com.
Welcome back. Our guest today is Carl Rattle, and we're talking about Henry Ford and where Henry Ford may have gotten some of his concepts. And you mentioned that he'd grown up on a farm, but that he hated animals, which I find kind of amazing.
It's amazing, isn't it? You have this idea of a man as great as Henry Ford having such an eccentricity that you don't really know about.
Yeah, that is amazing. And Prohibition, too, when you look back and think about who made all the money during Prohibition, and I find it difficult. Well, he was a moralist, and so probably it appealed to him, but really the government really doesn't have any authority to impose such a thing, a moral issue like that. It was for a very alternative purpose.
Yes, but it's worth remembering that the people who wanted Prohibition were generally a very Christian group. They were very, very keen on propounding this idea of it's a very left-wing idea of that if they were able to stop people spending money on alcohol, it would go and be spent on the family, and that you'd get a better society out of it. It's essentially a utopian vision, not unlike an awful lot of early socialist texts.
Right, right. So they were trying to fix society instead of fixing individuals.
Yes, and of course, the fact that Henry Ford and society in general needed a entire investigative bureau to actually stop people drinking is interesting in itself. And the head of that bureau tended to be pastors for quite a long time.
Interesting.
And they were the ones who were big on the on preventing people drinking.
Yes.
Which I find quite really. But so they're getting back to the issues around Orlando Smith's A Short Beyond Great Questions. There is a false quotation that's doing the rounds from the book, which claims that Orlando Smith is a Jewish professor, and he wrote something in 1988. Considering he died in, I think, 1912 or something, that's quite amazing.
Right.
It comes from Stormfront, of all places, and I've seen it. It's the only place I remember I was around when it started, and I remember looking at it thinking, this is a bit weird, and looked at, and I happened to have the book of the original first edition, looked at it, thought, hang on a minute, this is complete posh. And, but it's still, of course, it's, some people believe it, and I have no idea why, because all you have to do is go on Wikipedia, and you can see the man was dead for 70 years, so how on earth he could have said that, I don't know, and he wasn't Jewish anyway. But there you go.
Right. It's interesting that it would come from that particular website.
Stormfront is not exactly my flavor of the month, because they don't have much transparency, and for all their talking about how they're hard line on the Jewish issue, they're not really. Most of the members, the best in the world, haven't got a clue.
Ah, okay.
So it's just something I thought I would point out, because it's something that gets brought up. I don't know, every time I discuss Smith with someone, they always need to mention that, and I'd like to get that one out, that it's complete gosh. There's nothing to it at all. As to the other sources of Ford's animus towards the Jews, one of them is experience. Ford had a great deal of experience dealing with Jews, particularly in and around Fordlandia in Brazil, which, is, as I said, is his rubber plantation. The Jews, when Ford Company announced it was going to move in somewhere, you'd get an inevitable flood of Jews heading into the area to try and buy up local produce, buy up land, so that they could sell it on to the Ford Company at hugely inflated prices. Ford predictably didn't like that. And it's quite understandable why. They were essentially cheating him out of money. And if there was one thing that Ford valued, it was money and the good name of his company. And if his company was to be associated with these piles of Jews heading towards, say, the Brazilian Amazon and buying up all this land and goods and so forth, then it would be a very, very big negative for him. It's one of the reasons, in the end, he relented in his little private little war with the Jews. They routinely cornered the market in, for example, in Dearborn. There was a big problem with Jews running the prohibition breaking alcohol speakeasies and so forth. And they also had problems with Jews putting very, very high prices on food. They cheated the Brazilians in Fordlandia out of huge amounts of money by bringing in rotten food, and it was not very nice. And Ford never really looked at Jews the same way again after his experiences with them.
Well, you know, they also brought in a lot of horrible alcohol. I mean, they learned how to manufacture in 3 to 4 hours what it took the real old-time, old-fashioned whiskey brewers years to manufacture. And they were using chemicals and introducing all of this alcohol into the society. And he probably knew about that.
Yes, he did. He was covered in the international Jew.
Right. All righty, we do have to take a 3-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Do you want to be free yet find that credit card payments are still tying you down? Does it seem like you're not getting anywhere month after month, payment after payment? Do you wish that there was some way to end the slavery and save your money for your family instead? FreeToProsper.com has a solution you've been waiting for. Since 2007, we've been implementing an advanced debt repudiation program which legally ends unsecured debt payments, lets you keep your money, and protects your property. This is not another settlement, repayment, or consolidation program, but a true debt repudiation process that's helped hundreds of Americans all across the country start living better quality lives and prepare for an uncertain future. For a free consultation or to learn more, give us a call today at 877-417-8393 or visit freetoprosper.com right now. That's 877-417-8393 or visit freetoprosper.com.
If you're the mother of a child with behavior problems, I'd like to talk to you. My name is Janet Lehman. I'm a behavioral therapist and a mom. I know what it's like when the child you love becomes a defiant, out-of-control child who disrespects you. That's why my husband James and I created the Total Transformation, the program that tens of thousands of moms are now using to turn around their child's behavior. If you've heard about the Total Transformation and wondered if it will work for you, now you can try it for free. I'm willing to give away 1,000 programs today for free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. We'll let you keep it for free. I know the Total Transformation works because I used these techniques with my own son and with troubled kids for over 30 years. Let me prove to you that it works by giving you the program for free.
Call now. 1-800-583-1093. 1-800-583-1093. That's 1-800-583-1093.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. Our guest today is Carl Rattle, and his website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. And we were talking about alcohol, and yeah, I can see why Ford would be have some feelings against the Jews, because quite frankly, I mean, that was a pretty terrible thing that they did, and they actually ran a lot of legitimate businesses, whiskey brewing businesses, whiskey distilling businesses, out of business, and had a monopoly to do that.
I was going to say that there's something people forget when they're dealing with this issue, and something Ford himself, the person who wrote in Ford's name, forgot, was that Jews in Eastern Europe since about the 18th century had a significant hold over the entire tavern business, you know, having a sort of a bar, and in each sort of town, village would have a bar or a tavern or, you know, an inn. And most of those in Western Russia and Poland were owned by Jews, and quite often highly religious Jews at that. That's where the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of Hasidim, I'm sure you've heard of that, is a very, very religious, mystical Jewish movement, very common today. He was basically a barman, and he wrote his books after hours when he'd finish drinking or what have you. And so you can see there's a slight interesting thing about someone writing mysticism after drinking all day.
Yeah.
Apart from it being a landlord. It's an interesting thought, isn't it?
I understand that the Russian government actually halted this kind of activity and bar ownership, and that that was why the Jews retaliated to some extent. Is that right? Or
to a degree, yes. The Jews were very, very powerful in the Jews, in fact, formed the middle class in a good part of Western Russia by the time of the revolution in 1905, and then later the February Revolution and October Revolution of 1917. And the idea that this Russian government was terrorizing everyone is a complete nonsense. The Russian government wasn't efficient enough to terrorize everyone. Put it this way, Trotsky, while he was in prison, in the most secure prison in Russia, the Peter and Paul Fortress, basically read huge amounts, engaged in a lively correspondence, and wrote numerous articles for revolution publications. While, he conceived writing a book on Freemasonry, of all things.
He was introduced to Freemasonry from some of those publications in the prison library?
Yes, because he in his letters he talks about the fact that he has read about Freemasonry and he wanted to write a book on it. Whether or not he had any involvement with it, I haven't encountered any information in that regard that I would consider persuasive. But nevertheless, we do know he knew an awful lot about it, and that in some of his later articles, when he was writing as part of the, in quotes, Fourth International, he did reference Freemasonry from time to time. And he certainly sympathized with his rationalistic view and anti-Christian politics. It kind of leads into what I was, to the other part of Ford's own thought regarding Jews, is that Ford was a keen watcher of international affairs, and he saw the Jewish role in the Russian Revolution in 1905, which Trotsky was central, and why he went to the Peter and Paul Fortress, and the February Revolution of 1917, Kerensky and others, and the October Revolution of 1917, Lenin, Litvinov, Trotsky, Yuritsky, Radek, Kamenev, Zinoviev, etc., etc. And he, of course, began to see that this was fitting a pattern. He'd also be aware of the various big scandals that were going on in this at the same time. You had Edward Drumont in France exposed the Jewish hand, or especially the Rothschild hand, behind the Panama Canal, and he went to prison, talking about how the Rothschilds had bought deputies, had done this, had done that. And he was a very brave man because he was the father of French anti-Semitism, and he wrote possibly one of the best books of that time on the Jewish question called La France Juive, two volumes, 1888, I do believe. That sort of corrupt atmosphere, that kind of revolutionary fervor was playing into all that. And then you have a lot of Jews in the US newspaper and entertainment industry, the rise of Hollywood, which was heavily Jewish stroke socialist. And it was anti-prohibition, which was, of course, Ford was pro. And many of the Jews in this time were very openly liberal and left-wing. And the years after 1917, the key part in formation of Ford's anti-Jewish views, many of these Jewish liberals and socialists turned into hardline communists. So it's to a little surprise that when the Protocols of Zion turned up, Ford saw them as being a true reflection of what he saw. I mean, there's that famous quote that he said, they fit what I can see happening in the world. Jews cited sans context, but if you see it in the context of everything is going, everything is changing, everything is happening, we've got revolutions inspired by Jews, we've got Jews owning our media entertainment, and they've now kind of become communists, we've got the Rothschilds who are corrupt, but they are encouraging the public relations image that they have huge political and diplomatic power, and the Warburgs as well. The Jewish involvement in the various communist revolutions, like the Spartacus revolt, the 133 days of Belakun in Hungary, and the almost exclusively Jewish high-ranking communists in the America's own Communist Party, the Canadian Communist Party, Sam Cogan, the raid at Bridgewater in 1924 only hardened that view by exposing the fact that a lot of the controllers of the Communist Party in the USA were themselves Russian Jews.
Right.
And it didn't help. So, yeah. And it didn't help that the revolution immediately declared open season on Christianity. And of course, Ford was a very devout Christian, even if he was very quiet about it. And at the time, and still is, and to a large extent still, is one of the central problems that communism has, is that it attacks religion in general as outmoded superstition. And even if it's apologetic towards it, it still wants to destroy it. It's just it regards it as a temporary alliance to be in its benefit at the moment. I mean, to give you an idea of the power that Ford saw controlling the world in the Protocols of Zion, there was a book in 1971 by a non-Jew called Stephen Birmingham, and he talks about the Jewish power in New York. And this is a pro-Jewish book. This isn't. This is meant to be an extolation of the wonders that Jews have done in the world. But does a very good job of showing how powerful Jews, in fact, are in even one city. And if you think about that in the context of, say, Ford's own work and views, it's not understandable why he came to the conclusion that the Protocols of Zion were, in fact, accurate and they fitted the events. And they explained the unexplainable, what was happening, and he believed them, and I don't blame him. A lot of if I was then, I suspect I may well have believed the protocols myself.
Sure.
I mean, people tend to forget that you get the snide commentaries on the protocols, as I'm sure you're aware.
Oh, absolutely. People say they were a forgery, but you know, what were they a forgery of? The real thing? Just because a court judged them to be that doesn't mean a thing.
Well, the court, you mean the court in Bern?
Right, saying that it was a forgery.
It was overturned, the judgment.
Right.
It was overturned by a later court on the grounds that legally there was no case of saying the protocols were not a forgery because you don't have what we call providence. You have no proof that the protocols are what they say they are, but you equally have no proof that they are what they say they are. Perhaps the most interesting thing about the protocols is the fact that a lot of their detractors came up with their arguments before they had even any evidence that the protocols were a forgery. To give you some idea, 1920... there was the a famous booklet put out by a conglomerate of U.S. Jewish organizations to their fellow citizens about, what's so called, about the protocols, where they claimed it was a mass conspiracy against the Jews by Gentiles and Tsarist agents. And lo and behold, in 1921, a year later, Philip Graves of the London Times supposedly got was told by a Mr. X in Constantinople, of all places, that they were a forgery and that he had studied them for a long time and that they were part of the dialogues of Montesquieu and Machiavelli. And, they just decided this was the case, and they said, okay, well, that sounds like that, that sounds like that, so that sounds like that. Problem, we should immediately realise, is they are comparing a translation of a French to an English with a translation from a Russian, from a, supposedly a French to a Russian, from a Russian to an English translation. So how can they make a cogent case based on it being translations? We know translations are a problem. as scholars, we know this is a problem, and you never, ever use translations if you can possibly help it to prove a case based on that. And if you have to use a linguistic case based upon translations, you do so in the best possible light. They have the Russian, the original Russian edition. They have various French documents. They have the original French. They have the original Russian. They could compare the two, but no, they instead they compare it in English against it in English, which is both of which are translations. So you can't have it that you can't have it both ways. You can't have it as a clever literary forgery off of that particular book, off the dialogues of Montesquieu and Machiavelli, and you can't have it as being disproved by Philip Graves. Because to have both of those are mutually exclusive. Because Graves never conceived his argument in the knowledge that they had been forged by that particular book, and he didn't know, and as far as I know, he did not know Russian. So how on earth could he make the comparison? He didn't. He found some passages that looked alike and said, yes, they are the same. And because they ever wanted to believe it and had pounded that view beforehand, they did believe it. It's really that
Certainly.
Simple as far as
Well, if you have enough authority, you can say anything and there will be a significant amount of people who will believe you, even if they don't look into it themselves.
Yes, and the Holocaust is the classic example.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, the courts have said several things, like, for instance, the Armenian genocide. If the court said that it happened, so it happened. Even if it was, even if just a portion of it happened, they made a big deal of it and made it, legitimate. The courts legitimize a lot of stuff.
Sorry?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just saying that Abraham Foxman, head of the ADL, famously backpedaled on the Armenian genocide.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He was caught publicly saying that it didn't matter and it wasn't a Holocaust.
Oh, my.
It wasn't a genocide. And he backpedaled. I don't think I've ever seen him backpedal quite as fast as that. Because he got attacked from just about every angle.
Well, it's because the Jews were in charge of the Ottoman Empire at the time that it happened, and I think too many people recognized that they were leading it and executing it, organized it, planned it, and that it was a lot of Christians that died in it.
Yes, and there's a very very strong Armenian presence in a lot of powerful Jewish areas, oddly enough,
sure.
In America. And they've been traditionally seen as allies, but this caused a breach between the communities, interestingly enough. And Abraham Foxman predictably tried to get away from that very, very quickly, but he hasn't been able to. It's sort of stuck, because people never forget something like, your genocide doesn't matter, but you must bow down, before ours.
Yes.
It's the kind of thing that tends to not get forgotten.
Yes, interesting. Very interesting.
So getting back to Ford, though, these events sort of they fostered Ford's belief in the principles of Zion because they fitted events. Ford bought the Dearborn Independence to begin to combat what he saw as a liberal Jewish domination of the American media. He oversaw, although he did not write, many different types of articles in it, which broadly reflect Ford's views and were not uncommon at the time. The same views are propounded so much more effectively, actually, by the radio priest, Father Charles Coughlin of Middleflower, who was basically silenced by a conglomeration of Jews and who stopped his publications being sent out in the mail. And by Jews who forced the Catholic Church to basically tell him he couldn't preach on the radio anymore, or he would be excommunicated.
Oh, yes, I heard that, and it was very interesting. So it kind of tells you who was running the Catholic Church by then.
Yes, there's always been several factions in the Catholic Church. There's always been the Jewish faction, and then there's been the anti-Jewish faction, and it's quite hard sometimes to distinguish between who's who, because they're both talking the same language, and if you're not Catholic, it's very difficult to understand the ecumenical language that's going on, and the meanings, and the sort of subtext in all that's, that occur. In the Dearborn Independent, he pans a lot of views, the most famous are his anti-Jewish views, but there's a lot of others as well, things like he was pro-prohibition, of course. He's very, very strong anti-communism, and in his anti-communism, and he's anti-union.
Whoops, we're losing you. The music's playing, so we lost you, but we will come back in 3 minutes.
Sometimes you don't eat right and your body doesn't function correctly. On a day-to-day basis, your body needs a lot more than you think. But to do that, it's almost impossible. What can you do? Daniel chapter 1's 1 Kings formula. Tested, tried, and true. And an obvious favorite among the many Daniel chapter 1's customers. Why? Because 1 Kings has dozens of vitamins, nutrients, good carbs, protein, everything you need all in a delicious mix. It comes in two delicious flavors, chocolate or vanilla, and they're instantly bioavailable. That means that as soon as you drink it, within a few minutes, those nutrients are working. For lack of a better term, 1 Kings is pre-digested, so it's instant. Mix in water or juice, and your body is using it immediately. Get 1 Kings. Call 800-504-5511. That's 800-504-5511. Use promo code 100A for a discount. That's 100A.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
Sure, there are winter specials, and then there are super winter specials at HerbalHealer.com. Battle through this cold and flu season with powerful, natural, and safe flu fighters like Elderberry Power, Orgicillin, Olive Leaf Capsules, Grapefruit Seed Extract, and Resper 8, all specially priced during the winter sale at HerbalHealer.com. Don't forget Vitamin D3 this winter. Right now, HerbalHealer.com has 120 soft gels, 1,000 IUs, sale priced at only $9. We also have a super winter special on 6 homeopathic liquid detoxes. Whole body detox, liver detox, kidney detox, lymph detox, brain detox, and lung detox. All liquid detoxes, regularly $26.95, are now just $20. HerbalHealer.com. As always, new customers get a free 128-page catalog with your order. Log on now and save big when you hit the winter specials at HerbalHealer.com. Healing the world with nature, one person at a time, since 1988.
All righty, welcome back. Our guest is Carl Rattle, and you, when the music starts playing, then it kind of fades out other things that are being said. So
okay.
You said that he was anti-Semitic, and he was also anti-communist, and then after that, it was all a blur. So, could you repeat?
He was pro-social credit, which means he was pro-giving people the chance to do well and to get the opportunity to own their own land, etc. He was pro-industry at the same time, and he was also incredibly opposed to the increasing Jewish power, as you can see from one of his last essays in the International Jew, which is an address to the Jews, which he just basically says, can you stop it, please? Otherwise, there will be consequences. The person who wrote the International Jew, or certainly who edited it, was William Cameron. He acted as a sort of secretary to Ford. Ford had other secretaries and another who were point men, but William Cameron was the major figure involved in this particular endeavor. He recruited ex-white Russians like Boris Berezov, who has been labeled an anti-Semite by Michael Kellogg in his recent 2005 The Russian Roots of Nazism. That's complete kosh. I have challenged Kellogg on his assertion, and he's backed down on it.
Interesting.
I pointed out to him that, in fact, if you read Brazel's own work, Brazel was not anti-Semitic. He highlighted the Jewish role in communism, but not out, you know, not, he didn't say it was a creation of the Jews. He said there was a significant Jewish role. This is evidenceable. And Brazel's own work was generally anti-communist. It wasn't anti-Jewish in the majority of its forms. So to call it anti-Semitic is silly and pointless. He edited the Dearborn Independent and probably was the first to see the potential of a series of articles being published independently on the Jewish question, with Ford's name as a kind of editorship, you know, sort of a thing, say, Henry Ford believes this, rather than Henry Ford wrote this. He was right, to be frank with you. William Cameron was very right. To give you some idea of how right he was, the International Jew very quickly became a bestseller and was translated into French and German within a year. The German edition, in particular, went through 11 separate editions in 3 years and sold 37,000 copies in just one of these editions. It was published by Theodor Fritsch's Hammerverlag, which added another major authority to its name. Theodor Fritsch was a very, very major figure in German anti-Semitism, and later a deputy of the Nazi Party. He has been called recently the godfather of German anti-Semitism, as he was one of the big figures in resuscitating it and pointing out the fact that that Jews really are a problem, regardless of their religion. We know that Adolf Hitler read The International Jew while he was in prison in Landsberg am Lech, and later cited it as one of his major influences on his thought in Mein Kampf. And it was later considered required reading for all members of the NSDAP and stayed in print throughout the Third Reich in Germany, and was one of the very popular books at that time. The French edition was another bestseller. It was quickly being cited by major figures on the French anti-communist right, such as Monseigneur Juon, who edited the major anti-communist, anti-Jewish Francophone journal for the Review of International Society.
Okay, all righty. We have to break for our top of the hour, 1 minute break. We will be right back.